Our recording process is going. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are having our hearings today, March 13, 2024, in the Zoom platform. Our marshal today is Paige Clark. I'm going to ask you to please call court to order.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Frisch, Judge Hallbrooks, the Honorable Renee L. Werke presiding.
We do have three matters that are set for oral argument presentation on the Zoom platform. Reminder, counsel, I think both of you have been here before through the Zoom medium. This is the only recording. I want to remind you of that. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your case to the panel judges. 5 minutes is always reserved to appellate counsel for rebuttal if you choose to use that. We had some background noise. I was going to remind everyone, if you're not speaking, to go ahead and mute. Well, maybe not have that background noise. And please remember to state your name and which party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your argument. I'll ask our marshal to now call the first case for consideration.
First case is A231384 in the matter of the application of Jesus Adrian Soto for a change of name of minor.
Judge, I'm having
can't a, identify a, that I'm, background noise.
I've got to figure. I'm going to have to leave and rejoin. I don't have any feedback now. I don't know how to get. I don't know which one I am, so I don't know how to get rid of it.
Judge, this is Judge Werke injecting. Mr. Wettering, if you are agreeable to simply arguing without being visible on the screen, maybe we can just go with it as you appear now. Don't delete anything. We'll just go because you are coming through loud and clear. Is that agreeable with you?
That's agreeable, Judge.
All right. With that said, I think let's leave the video alone. I believe my colleagues are agreeable to that solution, and we will can proceed with the argument simply by listening to his audio presentation. All right, with that said, we haven't started our clock running. Our case has already been called. We're going to proceed with court file number A231384. Mr. Wettering, you did introduce yourself, and you can go ahead at this point with your argument. The time clock will start as soon as you begin speaking.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Into our argument here, we have, a fairly simple matter before the court. We have a petition for a name change. I trust the court has read the briefs on the matter. It's our view of this is that the court should reverse the trial court below because there was not an exercise of discretion, of caution, as required by the prior cases in this type of situation on a name change, where there was not clear and compelling evidence that the substantial welfare of the child necessitates the name change. And there seems to be some confusion here about what the courts are to do with regard to this. Now, 25910 involves a change of a minor upon the petition of a guardian or legal guardian. And that, I believe that statute essentially provides for that change and how that's to go about where both parties agree, both the parents agree on the name change. And then 25911 goes into this issue of, the court should grant the name change. But the cases say that where one party objects, then the court is to exercise caution in changing it and only change it where there's evidence of where there's compelling evidence that the substantial welfare of the child necessitates such a change. And the courts have, like in the Saxton case, that was an attempt by the mother to hyphenate the name following dissolution from the father. And the court did not grant that and did not find that there was a compelling reason to do that. Where I get caught up in this, and I think where the some confusion comes in, is where the courts have this idea that the objector needs to prove that there's not compelling evidence. It's almost like a double negative. Obviously, if a person is petitioning the court to change the name, they have to show that there is compelling evidence, and it begs a question, as I've just described, as to how that works.
If we agree with you as to far as the burden is concerned, where does this go? Is this something that we would be remanding back to the trial court for further hearing and consideration, further testimony and so on? Where do you see this going?
I see it as you have the testimony on the record, the transcript is there of the hearing, and that you could reverse it. And that's what has been done in the other cases. Where they've granted a name change. That's what's the other thing that's kind of interesting about this is that they essentially have reversed nearly all of the cases involving a name change. The courts have reversed them based upon not having a compelling compelling evidence and just go ahead and reverse. The second alternative,
Counsel, isn't the question of whether the evidence is compelling a discretionary decision by the district court? I mean, I understand your argument about the misapplication of the burdens, but it seems to me like the district court should get another opportunity to evaluate the evidence and determine whether the burdens were, you know, with the appropriate burden and then make a determination under the correct lens. Why is that not proper?
Well, I'm not saying it's not proper. It's up to your consideration. What I am saying is that you have the record there before you. And it's pretty brief. And I think it's pretty clear in that record that you could not argue, I don't think, logically and with any degree of credibility, in my opinion, that there's compelling evidence that the substantial welfare of the child necessitates the change in the name. And so I do think that it just needs to be reversed and sent back, and the boy should have his given name at his birth and so on. And there's one point that I would like to make in this, and that is the first case in Minnesota that had this was the Robinson case. And there the court, of course, handled it in the fashion I'd like to see this handled. But one of the premises that the court did there was address this issue about who had power. And the court said that neither parent has a superior power in naming the child. Now, that doesn't apply here because in Robinson, the parties were married when they had the child. And in this case, the Minnesota statutes in an unmarried woman giving birth to a child has custody, legal custody of that child, and she has the authority to name that child. It's not just by happenstance that the child got named her maiden name. That was her name when the child was born. She wasn't married. The child was in her custody. She had the authority to do that. And it's been over 5 years now since that's been the case. And for the petitioner or the respondent in the case, the father, didn't even petition for an order for parenting time and all the rest until the child was about 5 years old. Now, I will say this, that during that time, the mother involved the father. The father was involved in the child's life to some extent. And there's no terrible animosity or anything like that between these two parties. And and she gets along with his family and all the rest. At least, you know, they've made that part work. So we don't have a terrible situation that way. But when we have to have it so that, and I think the law is that when a child is given a name by the proper person who had authority to give it, and then there needs to be some other reason than the father saying, well, I want him to have my name too. And in the cases in Saxton, the court said, no, you can't do that. Now, counsel noted in his brief, accurately so, that the court said, well, there may have been evidence either way, that the court could have decided it either way. But I would have to question, what does compelling evidence of substantial welfare necessitating a change? That has to mean something. And it can't just mean that now I want the child's name to be my own. And just because I am the father, it seems to me that begs the question, what does that mean? And I think it's clear that this court could look at the transcript and say, there's nothing here that would tell a court that there's compelling evidence to meet that standard. I just can't imagine that that's the case. Now,
Mr. Wettering, I'm going to interject, if you may, to circle back to Judge Frisch's question. I mean, the difficulty for us on review is we do not have a determination here by the district court on this clear and compelling issue. And you say the record's sufficient, but you would agree, would you not, that we have nothing from the district court on that particular part of the determination?
Yes, the court below did not say that there was compelling evidence that the substantial welfare of the child necessitated the change. And you're absolutely right there. And having not found that, it's clear that it seems like that the judge below did not seem to think the court needed to find that. And that's what's troubling to me, is that we don't have a lot of litigation in this area. And I think this is why, is because it is difficult to change a child's name from the given name where one party disagrees that it be changed. And I think if we go this way and say, and make it easier to do that, I'm not suggesting it should never be done, but there ought to be compelling evidence that necessitate the change. And the cases indicate that the courts are very hesitant to uphold changes such as been done in this case. And I don't think the lack of the judge having found, if the judge did not find that there was compelling evidence to necessitate the change, then there wasn't. The court, there wasn't. If the court would have found that, then you'd have to look on whether or not the court abused its discretion in finding it based upon those facts. But here, the court did not find that. So it should not be remanded.
But the problem is the court is silent on it. I mean, there's no finding whatsoever. So you're suggesting that we then infer the court found not clear and compelling evidence.
Yeah, I think the court recites what the court thinks it's supposed to find. Yeah. And one of those things is, the court wrote in the opinion that it required clear and compelling evidence necessitating the name change, but then never found that there was clear and compelling evidence to necessitate the name change. And if you look at that transcript, I don't think you can spin it to such a degree that you would come up with a conclusion that there was clear and compelling evidence that the substantial welfare of the child necessitated the change. I think the court not finding it means it's not a finding. and that it could be, it can be reversed. We'd be asking for reversal if the court had surmised that there was clear and compelling evidence. We'd be saying to the court, look at this, look at the record here. It's an abuse of discretion, but the court did not even find it. I think the court just said, well, if that I'm somehow mandated to change the name like it was a joint petition by two parents or a single legal guardian or something like that. You send a petition in front of me. Unless the objector has some overwhelming reason not to change the name, which stands the whole situation on its head, then we're going to go ahead and change the name. And there's nothing more in here than, well, he gets along, the child gets along with his dad, the mom gets along, everybody, they want it because it's in their cultural tradition, the dad's name should be first. Well, I think with all due respect to where we're at in the world today, we're long past that, and should be. This was a child born out of wedlock. She named the child, and she's the one enrolling him in school, doing all the things with him, and he has her name, and that is still her name. So there's no reason not to just reverse this and have this over with. So I'd ask for the court to reverse on that basis. Thank you.
And counsel? Mr. Burkholz, you have to unmute. Thank you.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, Mr. Wettering. I always appreciate when you get on appeal, and both he and I were the trial court attorneys. And we wrangled quite a bit in the district court. And so I think that the district court did exactly what she should have done. Of course, it's always nice to be the respondent on appeal, as that's not my typical chair. I'm usually the appellant. But I'm looking at page 10 of the order, and it says, the court finds that at the present time and under the present circumstances, there is clear and compelling evidence that the substantial welfare of the child necessitates a change of his surname from that of the mother to that of both father and mother. So, I mean, that is the finding. And I thought I heard Mr. Wettering suggest that if there wasn't such a finding, but that is the finding on page 10, just before the judge's signature in the memorandum in the order. And reviewing the case law, I could empathize a little bit with the idea of, you know, the concept of shifting burdens of what does it mean when it says shall grant, and I can understand that, try to acknowledge that in my brief, but there isn't a challenge on appeal to really any of the substance. As Mr. Wettering pointed out, there is a transcript, undisputed testimony, unchallenged findings by appellant. So the court did consider all the five factors under Saxton, made the analysis. I think there's ample evidence in the record. I think the greater problem is the concept that what evidence do you have in tough cases, close cases? And that's why I brought in the family. And the family came in and testified, and the parties testified. And, appellant really didn't bring in any evidence to support her case. And I get the impression that it wasn't required, that the burden to show clear and compelling was so high that it was unsurmountable. Well, the district court disagreed, and that, you know, as trial attorneys, we always disagree what amount of evidence it takes to get clear and compelling evidence, or et cetera. I mean, that's just a challenge. But in this case, the district court agreed with the respondent here, with the father, and weighed the evidence. And so the weighing of the evidence is the abuse of discretion, and there was no abuse of discretion. And that's a pretty wide standard when the court properly considers the law. The court just made, one reference to the concept of the shall grant, which is probably more of the law clerk's copy and pasting of the law than it is the court's findings. And I don't think that the district court made any improper reference to the law or any improper findings, either legally or factually. And did the court spend a lot of time discussing it? Well, no. Does the court require to spend a lot of time before it makes a conclusion that there was clear and compelling evidence? No. The court just has to simply follow the law, which is consider the evidence that's presented, make analysis under all the factors. And the court, I think, you know, in 10 pages, it's longer than a lot of orders I get on name changes. It certainly isn't a lack of effort by the district court. I think there's ample evidence for this court to affirm under the abuse of discretion standard when there is no challenge to the findings, no reference to any errors. And keep in mind, it is a hyphenation as well. And I know the law doesn't necessarily reference that one way or the other, but the court, I think, tried to amply create a remedy that was within the discretion of the district court. I know unpublished decisions aren't super helpful, but there's the case law is unpublished and does go both ways. But I think the record in this case is pretty strong. And as I kind of referenced back in the Robinson and Sexton cases, that, you know, district courts can come to different conclusions on the same case, and it wouldn't be an abuse of discretion. The same way that this district court in this case could have denied the name change. And I'm not sure I would have appealed, because the discretion is wide. And as long as the court considers all the factors, as long as the evidence was properly considered, and I think the court did so. What is also unique factually, I think, is that this is a blended family with a very strong cultural heritage here from the father's side. And that cultural heritage was considered. It was very strong. And what was trying to incorporate was the child's culture into the hyphenation, and the court did so and found that a significant factor here, and I think page 8, is the strong Hispanic family ties to the last name and how it was integrated into this child's life. And that's significant. I don't think appellant thinks it's not, just that it's just not enough. And this court thought it was enough. And when we have the brothers and the relatives, the mother and brothers, my client, a respondent, father, all testified. And what's interesting, too, if you look at the transcript, is appellant mother doesn't really disagree. I mean, she disagrees with the name change, but I would say that's every custody case we get that ends up being contested. They always disagree. It's that same idea that joint custody is not disfavored simply because the parties disagree. I know it's a unrelated statute, but you know, you can award something even if the parties disagree, and still find it's in the best interest of the child, even when parties disagree. And so I think that's what happened here. So I don't have really a lot to add. I think the district court did its job, made its proper findings, made analysis of the law, looked at all the facts. I made the right decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wettering, anything else that you want to add as rebuttal? You would need to unmute if you are muted. I'm going to direct that if Mr. Wettering contacts the court after the fact and feels that he didn't have an opportunity to respond, that he can ask the court for direction. I am going to presume that he has summed up his remarks. Panel judges, is there any questions that you would have of Mr. Burkholz before we conclude this case matter?
No, thank you. None for me either. Thank you.
All right. And again, just based on our Zoom issues that we've had with Mr. Wettering on his end, he can communicate with the court if he feels that he was deprived of any opportunity to offer rebuttal. With that said, we will conclude this case. It's deemed submitted. That means a decision, of course, will be issued in the statutory timeframe. Thank you.